Hello and welcome to episode 32 of Future Library. The beginning of this is going to sound a little bit familiar to my guest because we've just done it literally a moment ago. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes into the podcast and I've suddenly gone, going to have to stop you there, I've not hit record. Which my guest has pointed out is not bad going for 32 episodes and never having done that before. So, glad we caught it when we did. Anyway, my guest is, I'm going to redundantly do the tease who it is. He's played in one band for a long time. Good thing about being able to do this again is I've been able to correct that because I slightly made a mistake in the opening before, listeners. So he's been in one band. He's been in that one band for a long time. He plays in Glasgow. Before I come to him, I'm going to say that if you want to, obviously the podcast is free. We have a lot of listeners now. We've gone up to 2,000 listeners, and we did have what felt like no listeners for a long time, but now it's 2,000 listeners, so thank you. Obviously, you never have to pay for it, which is great, and I'd never expect you to pay for it. But if you do want to show your gratitude and go, hey, Alex, that's rather good, I'd like to give you some money, go to my music website, go to asmallglassghost.co.uk and buy some music from me or something. You could pay as much or as little as you like, and you can have it for free if you want. Or you can go to alexbotton.co.uk, where there's links to all the projects I've done over the years, and you can get stuff for free as well. So you don't have to pay me for it. Have it for free. It's great. Ooh. Free music. Anyway, my guest, Gregor Barclay of How to Swim. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. This is, this is slightly easier the second time around, I think.
I've got a weird sense of deja vu. It's really strange. It's like, you know, we've not had this part of the conversation ever before, but it feels so familiar.
And the red button is definitely on now.
I've got a red light on my screen. I've got Audio Hijack Pro sitting in front of me, great, and I can see that the record button is depressed. Not in a kind of like, I want to kill myself kind of depressed, but as in pushed down. As much as a graphic can be. So, Gregor, you've been in How to Swim for a long time. Tell us a bit about How to Swim and yourself.
It was a band. Well, I would have been first year of uni. I was studying architecture at uni for God knows why. But and I started a band with some of the guys who were on the course, and then when they graduated, they left, and then other people came in, and it's just been that kind of new people have come in, old people have disappeared, and for some reason the band's never changed its name. It's just been the same. It's just kept going under the same moniker for 14 years now, which is either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what you make of the stuff that we've been churning out. I don't think we've done 14 years worth of music in terms of career stuff, because we've never been signed. So I feel like had we been signed, there'd have been more albums. But
so, I mean, and also not 14 years worth in real time, we should point out to the listeners. There's prolific, but not that prolific.
Not 14 years of recordings.
Not like if you dropped it into your iTunes, it would say 14 years of
You wouldn't get that. No. Can you get to a year? Has anybody got to a...
Let me have a look at my iTunes library.
Would it say a year if it was over a year?
I don't think mine's up to that length. I think you'd need quite a big iTunes library.
It's a lot of hours. That is a lot of hours.
It would be, because it does start to go into weeks and months after a while.
Well, it must eventually go to a year then.
Yeah, I thought. Mine tells me at, 23,000 items, mine tells me that that's 78 days. So it just seems to go at days then.
And that'll be a lot of music for 78 days.
That's 78 days worth of music just playing through without repetition.
I don't think we would even be, if you listen to all of the How to Swim stuff, that would be about 6 hours or something, probably at the very most. Not even close to a day.
My old band, The Moths, had one track that was 6 hours long.
See, I'm tempted to do something like that at some point, one of those kind of, like a 24-hour song, which you just kind of improvise with over a period.
There's upper limits on how long MP3s can be.
Really? I wasn't aware of that.
There is a weird upper limit thing, and I can't, or a size limit or something, and I can't remember what it is, but it does prevent you going over a certain size. So
where you were 6 hours, are you pretty much near that?
I don't know. I think I could have probably gone longer with it. I don't know. I mean, I didn't sit and play for 6 hours. I had a quite a long thing that I then time stretched.
Oh, right, okay.
So really, I mean, it's again, it's a little look behind the, you know, in the actor's chair, or in the musician's chair in this case. All I did was take something that I'd got that was sitting around, and I dumped it into this thing called Paul Stretch, and the computer really made it for me. And then I had a six-hour MP3 at the end.
There you go.
There you go.
I guess it's a bit like you can get those things where there's a kind of generative program that takes a loop and then changes the loop, and you can just have it play. I think I've seen art installations where somebody's had a piece of music that can technically last forever because there's a computer program behind it that changes it and continues to generate variations on it.
There's a website that does it.
Is there? There you go.
Yeah, it brings up the song in a big thing. Yeah, it's a big circle comes up on your screen with the song, and it identifies all the points that can be looped, and then you just hit play, and it will just play forever.
And it'll play your own song. You can upload your own tune and have it play forever.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. That's the next How to Swim release. Sorry, already.
There you go. That's an hour's worth of boom. You just sit there and play with one song for an hour.
All right.
Sorted. And the next one. And then there you go. You could get 24 albums out of that.
I do feel like we need to catch up. We've only had, I mean, the one that we're just finishing just now is technically only our third album. And then we've had a bunch of
14 years.
In 14 years. I know. By your standards, Alex, that's dismal.
Well, actually, I was going to say, I mean, this year I've actually been quite slow. I've only done four releases this year. So I've been a lot slower than usual. Usually I'm a bit more prolific than that. But, you know, this year it's been definitely a case of, I've been busy doing the podcast, Gregor. Is that
my excuse? You've got a variety of other things to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's my excuse for having done the same amount of albums in 1 year as you've done in...
my entire lifetime.
Yeah, that's my excuse. The previous year, I did something like 40 releases, so...
Why do I have no excuse?
Well, you've got, you know, well, no, if people, this is the thing that the listeners often don't realise, well, they do realise, but I'm going to say it anyway, that we, you know, people have jobs, they have lives, things get in the way.
Yeah.
Often one project will take over from another and whatever. Also, I have to point out, if listeners are suddenly noticing that I'm getting gradually louder, it's because I am slightly turning my mic up. Hopefully my software will fix it all afterwards, but anyway. So that might be completely redundant. People will be listening going, well, he sounds exactly the same. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe slightly less hissy.
Shall I turn it down to compensate?
No. It's all fine. No. For a little look behind the curtain of how I do the podcast, I like to do this regularly on the episodes. Just give the listeners a little bit of magic of how I make this and, you know, show them how to do it themselves. I use a piece of software called Levelator, which is designed purely for podcasts. And you drop your uncompressed audio onto it and it fixes it. It runs a whole load of compression and things on it and limiters and stuff in it. Gets everything to a level and it gets all the audio to the right level. It's really very, very good. So
I think I use Levelator for, I did a podcast on, we would review the trailers for movies. We wouldn't review the movies. We would just review the trailers on a podcast. And that, and I think Levelator was how I did the compression thing for that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic piece of software. It's great. Instead of sitting there with it all in front of you on your digital audio workstation of choice, and going through each individual part and going, oh, that's a bit quiet, raise it on that bit, lower it on that bit. You just chuck it into Levelator and just leave it for 5 minutes and come back. You have a nice output file that's usually fine.
It's a normalizer, technically, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It runs a whole bunch of little things in the background. One thing I would never recommend you listeners use it for is music. It makes music sound shit. Really, really shit. It just destroys music. But it's not designed for music. It's designed purely for spoken word. So,
does it just brick wall it?
I've no idea.
Is it like giving it a terrible master?
Well, the music thing. I can't even describe what it does. It just sounds horrid. I think because it doesn't know how to handle it properly, it just makes a complete... Well, I mean, I think it tries to approach it as it would try to approach speech and assumes that there'd be silences and all sort of... And, yeah, it just goes horribly wrong. Download it for free. Have a play. It's, you know, you might find you love the sound effects it gives.
It might be the whole new... that's what I'll do. I'll just have poorly mastered Levelator versions of tunes that I've made on the internet that... last 4 hours.
Oh, there you go.
That's the next 10 years of my career started out.
Maybe re-release all the albums as new deluxe Levelated versions.
Slow it down so they last 4 hours.
4 hours of Levelated audio. That'd be amazing.
Brilliant.
That'd be the best. Fantastic. So, How to Swim has been going for a long time, obviously. I say obviously, but that's not obvious, really, is it? No, it is obvious, because it's been 14 years. It's early in the morning for me. I guess it's actually almost 1 o'clock, isn't it? Fucking hell. I did notice when I was doing a little bit of research, which is unusual for me to have done any at all, you've got quite an impressive website it's the one at howtoswim.net. Which links from your Wikipedia page. It's an interesting approach.
That's still there.
You've taken an interesting approach to this.
Still there.
I'm not sure if this is what you're particularly aiming for, because it's kind of a kind of slightly kind of off-white colour. It's got a picture of a field.
lots of Japanese text.
And it says, and when you translate it, it says, is aiming to position the industry number one limited humans communications.
That's exactly what I wanted to say. That's explicitly what we wanted to have said.
Very avant-garde website. If I go
this
to
links, this links from where, Alex? I'm going to have to.
This is howtoswim.net, and it links from Wikipedia.
Right.
Let's see. Okay, on the about page, on the news page, I should say, news, it says position of industry number one is not a thing readily available. So there are a number of rival to person corporation communications. In order to overcome these rivals, limited human communication, polish Daily Fang. And on the alert, I am aiming for the position of number one communications co-human and information of the communications corporation person to introduce pitfalls.
Polish Daily Fang is a highlight.
Yeah.
Polish Daily Fang. There's a kind of
Polish Daily Fang
element to that.
Well, I'm hoping you'll use that as a title for something now.
I think that might be our next record.
Yeah, Polish.
My ownership of that domain name expired. And I wasn't allowed to buy it again. Obviously, which seems ridiculous, because the thing that it is being used for is clearly just a holding page to try and encourage people to buy it.
Yeah.
In fact, one of those websites gave me a quote for buying it off the people who owned it, and the quote was £40,000.
Oh, man.
Which is, is insane.
That's ridiculous. If I go to your other website, howtoswim.com, that has a picture of a diver.
Okay.
And another picture.
This is the curse of coming up with having a bad band name. Something that can be that can clearly be 100 other things. I don't think we really have a website now.
No. I don't think you do. Well, this one you could buy it or rent it. You could rent this one, the howtoswim.com, or buy it from mark.com. It's a picture of the diver appears to be hugging a sponge at the
top.
He
loves that sponge.
He does. This is the reason why, even though the moths stopped 3 years ago, I just renewed the domain name. For 4 years or 2 years.
We tried to get howtoswim.com and couldn't, but at the time, I think howtoswim.com was something. But obviously, howtoswim.com now is nothing. Why do they have these? Why do they not let me just buy these?
Because what happens is that if it's been used somewhere, any kind of version of it, then somebody will think there's money to be made off that. I can almost guarantee if I didn't renew themoths.co.uk, because it's been an active URL for over 10 years...
It would cost money.
Yeah, it'd get jumped on straight away, and somebody would... You know, it would cost me a fortune to get it back. So.
This is saying if I want howtoswim.com, I would have to make my best offer.
Yeah.
It's like buying a house.
Yeah, absolutely. It would go to a sealed bids.
Yeah.
And you'd have
usurped on my, you know what?
All the other bands called How to Swim and various, you know, swimming clubs would all be battling out.
Well, because the thing is very easy to forget how useful it is to learn how to swim online.
There you go.
You know,
because
you gotta if there's no point in doing it in the flesh, you need to have the theoretic knowledge under your belt first.
Yes.
Before you even get in that water.
And let's face it, Craig, not everybody's near a lake or a swimming pool.
If you're not near a body of water, you're going to need to do this. .com I can't get, according to this other website. Sorry, I'm just googling my own website.
What about .co.uk?
.co.uk is taken as well.
Oh my god.
UK.com, I don't want those, too many. Howtoswim.net, .org, .co are all taken.
DomainMonster.com comes up as howtoswim.co.uk, so you could buy that. But would you want to buy one from Domain Monster? I wouldn't.
Domain Monster, wouldn't need to say Domain Monster, though, would it?
No, it wouldn't. No, I don't think they'd insist on that branding at the top of the page. No.
They're saying I could get howtoswim.com from then.
Yeah. No, .co.uk.
.co.uk, for how much?
It doesn't say.
Oh.
unfortunately.
See, this 123 reg says it's taken. What a nightmare.
Oh, man.
Is that something that's worth, I mean, do, what do we think? Is it still worth having a website? Is that still
I don't think it is, to be honest. I think having the band website with the about page and the news and, you know, who's in the band and what gigs you're playing and all that kind of stuff is completely redundant these days. I mean, all my websites for things now are just single pages that direct to...
to music.
Yeah, to music.
Yeah, you know, our website, if we give anyone a link now, we just give them a link to the Bandcamp page, which is just all of them, but that's just where all the music lives. And I think if you, I mean, if, and then if people like the music on Bandcamp, we're easy to find on Facebook and, you know, then they can get updates to the gigs.
Absolutely.
But,
well, I mean, the other thing you can do is if you want to be super, super cheap, you can just get a tiny URL redirect and just go for tinyurl.com/howtoswim, and that would work, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I use that. I'm using that at the moment. I'm going to plug why I'm using it right now. The reason being is that Kat's not very well, my lady wife. She has to go to hospital tomorrow to have her gallbladder out.
Crikey.
And it gets worse. Our car broke down this weekend. So that's great. Kat's phone got broken because when we went to Halfords in the rental car we had to hire because the car had broken down, we went to Halfords to get a charger to try and charge the battery to see if that would fix the car. That didn't fix the car, so we think it's the starter motor or the spark plugs or something. When we went to Halfords in the dark, Kat's phone fell out of her pocket unbeknownst to her, and we only found out that we didn't have it when we got home and we couldn't find it, and we did the find my phone thing, and it didn't beep in the house, and we checked the map, and it was showing it as several miles away. So we then went back to the car park where somebody had run over it. So we did get the phone fixed, but it did cost us £50 to do that.
If only a gallbladder was something you could sell on the black market.
Well, an infection. Well,
assuming it's a broken one. So
yeah, it's a broken one with gallstones, but maybe the gallstones could be used for something.
Maybe, yeah. Are they like... like diamonds? I mean, do they become
hard?
Pressed in the gallbladder into something magical?
Could they, exactly.
Do they grant wishes?
Could they be turned into some kind of jewellery, maybe? But yeah, the reason it gets worse at that point is that Kat was ill earlier this year, just a few weeks ago. She was in hospital for about 10 days and used up all her sick pay. So we don't actually have any sick pay for her when she goes into hospital this week. And she might be off for up to 6 weeks recovering. And that means that suddenly our income in the house has gone down. So we're doing a little bit of an appeal to try and get people to help out with that. So I've used tinyurl.com/helpcat2013, with Cat having a capital K, not a capital K, just a K instead of a C, and 2013 being in numbers. So tinyurl.com/helpcat2013. Anyway, that plug over. You could use a tiny URL. I mean, even that's fine these days. I think people no longer give a shit. Once it's typed in and in their favourites or whatever, they never go back to it. And I use everything just to redirect to Bandcamp and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's... I think the only one that I've got now that has pages with lots of information on is the Moths website, because it's just had that information for years. So, you know,
we had like a flash website, which is what used to be howtoswim.net, mm-hmm. which was quite jazzy. But and then I ended up feeling like, well, we spent a bit of money making it. And did we actually get any value off that? Did we get any gigs off it? Did we get more fans because of having it? Or was it just a nice thing to have, like a kind of pointless bauble sitting in our front room, you know? But, and I think it probably was not all that useful.
Well, that's it. I think what happens with them is that it's almost like a little kind of vanity thing, isn't it? After all, it's the thing you feel that it's the done thing to have it. And then and you think, oh, the other bands have got websites. We must have the best website.
Yeah. Legitimate bands have them. So my little two-bit operation should have one as well.
Yeah. And I think now it's getting, you know, less and less needful, I should say. It was quite interesting. When I was talking to Throwing Muses a few weeks ago, they didn't know that one of their websites existed. And I said, of course.
That's the advantage of being a signed band, I guess.
Yeah, well,
people who have been, you know, allocated this as their responsibilities, who aren't you.
Yeah, well, that was it. I was like saying, of course, there's throwingmuses.com. And they were like, no, it's throwingmusic.com. I was like, no, I'm looking at throwingmuses.com. And like, they looked it up live on the show. And we're like, oh, we've got this website. Oh, our website sucks.
I thought for a moment there you were implying that they didn't know the name of their own band.
No. They
were called Throwing Music. We've been called Throwing Muses all these years.
No, they have the whole thing for Throwing Music. It's always been their kind of little side thing for, you know, what they called all the websites and various things. But yeah, throwingmuses.com does exist, and they didn't know it existed. So I gave something to Throwing Muses that day.
There you go.
Which was nice of me, I thought.
I think in an ideal world, yeah, that it would be nice to have somebody looking over the digital side. I just feel like I'm not very good at the digital side. I think with most of the people I know who are in bands, the thing that we all kind of seem to suck at is the self-promotion thing. Everybody's good at writing the music and recording it and doing the gigs, but the actual self-promotion stuff is beyond most musicians, ridiculously.
No, I agree. I'm terrible at self-promotion. I'm really awful at it. I hate doing it. I hate trying to get gigs. I hate the whole thing.
I don't know what, is there an arrogance in that we think we shouldn't be doing it? Is it ideas above our station that we think, or is it just because our heads are in a kind of, you know, we think if our experience of being in a band should be exactly as it was in the 50s and 60s for bands, you know, we should have that same thing, despite the fact that obviously the industry has changed so dramatically.
I think maybe it comes down to individuals, because I think some bands are tremendously good at it and are perfectly happy just to bug people and irritate the shit out of them until they get what they want. My problem is that I just don't like bothering people, and I feel like I'm annoying them by bothering them, and I don't want to do that. So
I think you also feel as well that you might be bothering somebody who otherwise would be interested and might become not interested in what you're doing because of the bothering.
Yes. So you could have, you keep them never having heard you.
Yeah. They could have stumbled upon you and quite enjoyed the stuff that you do. But the fact that you've kind of come into their home and sold it to them means they're like, no, I'm not going to invest myself and my time and energy into this now.
Absolutely. Well, I found, though, from doing the podcast, I've actually got slightly better at bothering people now. And I found that just by asking people a lot, what I'm discovering, you see, Gregory, is most people are actually quite nice and will do things to help you. Now, that's purely from dealing with artists, though. I think when you're dealing with promoters and venue owners and label owners, a lot of those people aren't nice.
Yeah,
a lot of those people are assholes who are just purely in it for the money, and well, you know, which is nothing wrong with that. You know, they're running businesses, but
no, they have a right to do that in a capitalist society.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, but they're not the greatest people for dealing with when you're trying to get gigs and you feel that your art is important. Because
there must be good promoters somewhere, but I do feel that 90% of the gigs that we do, we seem to end up doing the bulk of the promotion stuff ourselves, even when there is somebody on board who is promoting.
Yeah,
there's some good ones.
Yeah. Well, I've had an experience in Birmingham where there's a certain venue that won't put me on again because they're saying that the last two gigs I played, nobody came to them. And the last two gigs I played, I was actually supporting somebody else that they'd put on and that they were promoting. So it's like, I'm not quite sure how that's my fault if the promoter hasn't promoted the show. But,
yeah, and that is their only job. It's explicitly in the job title is that you are supposed to be promoting the show.
Yeah, it does remind me very much of Armando Iannucci shows with the whole thing about their only job. When he fails at anything, he thinks about pole vaulters, whose only job is to vault with a pole. Something which they fail to do over and over again in public forever. Their only job. And then it goes on throughout the whole episode of various other people whose only job is to do a certain thing and they fuck it up.
And they publicly collapse at it on a regular basis.
Yeah, fail to do it in public all the time. I'm looking at the list of members of the band. It's a list that's, I have to say, it rivals the Moths in numbers of members. But then,
in former members or
former members?
It's only five of us now.
Yeah, well, your current list shows at least seven on your Wikipedia. I think you need to go onto Wikipedia, my friend.
I need to go and update it. Yeah, I mean, you could probably tell from our Wikipedia page that it is updated internally to a comical level.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody has ever updated our Wikipedia page who hasn't been me or our old drummer. So it's kind of become an exercise in just seeing how much pointless guff you can add to your own Wikipedia page without anybody stopping you.
Well, this is amazing. I'm amazed, actually, because I
know... So much detail on there.
Yeah, there's a lot on there, with only one citation.
What's the kind of discussion page where you can see the debates that have been going on? Like, I've never involved myself in the debates, but periodically I've read, and somebody said... This band have never achieved anything.
Yeah, this page was nominated for deletion. It was nominated for deletion on the 15th of May this year.
But then all these people went in and said, no, you can't. Where do you place the bar for how something is? Because someone had said, well, they'd never been reviewed in the NME. And the reply had been, well, how can you gauge that is the bellwether by which, you know, you have to deem a band legitimate just because they've not been in the certain publication that you deem important enough? Why does that mean that they're not noteworthy enough to have their own Wikipedia page?
Yeah.
It became quite an interesting philosophical discussion about what makes something noteworthy.
Well, Wikipedia is very, very strange because the band 16 Deluxe, who are from Texas, who were quite well known in the 90s and have just kind of returned recently, they don't have a Wikipedia page. Nobody's thought of them as noteworthy enough. Dundee band Leto, who had quite a lot of press, they don't have a Wikipedia page. I had one
And they've tried to make one, and they've said you can't have it.
Yeah.
I remember Leto. They must have enough...
You'd think
views and online stuff to be to link to, so that they could. I think if you put a page on and there's no links to anything and no citations, there's nothing elsewhere on the internet to prove that it exists.
Yeah.
Then it can't. But I thought with Leto they'd have been all right.
It was the same with The Moths, despite having 8,000 hits. If you type it in, which is actually a lot less than it used to be, things have slipped. If you type it into Google, there's lots of information about it. There just wasn't enough, obviously, to make that page not deleted. So it's a weird thing. So, I mean, well done for keeping your page.
That's the only time we've ever had an attempt for somebody to delete it. Which I then, of course, just because I think you read anything about yourself online, you think it's personal. But yeah. I was like, kind of, is this guy come to a gig and he really didn't like it? Or is it just somebody who gets a strange satisfaction out of deleting indie bands' websites?
They're not Snow Patrol. Take them off the web.
Anybody who isn't my favorite band, maybe it's like a half man, half biscuit fan who just hates everybody else.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not saying that all half man, half biscuit fans hate everybody else, but you know, they are known for their hate.
They're known for that.
They're famous for their hatred of everybody who isn't them.
Famously nihilistic.
Yeah, absolutely. Just their fans, mind, not the band themselves.
The band are
lovely, friendly folk. They're fans. Bunch of straight up nihilists and I think some of them are solipsists who are pretty much convinced that only they exist. Obviously not the band. I'm not talking about the band.
I think the band are aware that other people exist.
Yeah, I don't think, but I think it's the fans. The fans all think that, you know, they take that attitude that all they can be aware of is their own thoughts and that everything else possibly is an illusion, including, paradoxically, the music of Half Man, Half Biscuit.
Yes.
Brought them to this stage of...
That's nice kind of circular thinking as well. It's... Eats its own tail a little bit at the end. That's
good. It does a bit. They go straight back, and they're never able to branch out, and all they can do is just sit angrily in a room, having Wikipedia articles about other bands deleted.
So how many, back to the members there, how many former members did you have with The Moths?
Oh God, I don't know, because I used to list audience members if they got involved.
technically, I guess, they've been in the band.
Yeah, well, I did this thing for a while that was the Circle of Trust, which was a thing of passing signal through large numbers of people. It just had two cables, and everybody held hands, and one person at each end held a cable. And as long as everybody was holding hands, then...
Nobody got electrocuted.
Well, that's good. Nobody got electrocuted. And the signal passed through, and when the circuit was completed, and a sound would come out. And people used to find this most amusing, but I used to list the whole audience for shows.
Would the sound be different depending on how many people were in the circle? Or?
Yes, the pitch changed and all sorts depending on how many were in the circle and stuff.
And could you change the pitch while people were in this, whilst the circuit was complete, could you then make the people in the circle do something to make the sound change?
They could, if they let go of each other, it would stop. So people would start making little beats with it and stuff, and start
clapping
and touching their noses and stuff like that. So it got quite good.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
You know, it was fun for the audiences. It was fun for audiences in Stourbridge who'd never encountered that kind of thing and were just out for a drink on a Friday night. You'd have all these kind of people who looked like they were out on some kind of stag do or something, or hen night, all standing around in a big circle holding hands, looking baffled and smiling. It used to make people laugh, and that's a good thing.
I'm used to people looking baffled, and the smiling, not so much. But yeah.
No, I think in total members of people who've actually played with it, probably it's probably up there with the amount you've got. I mean, your list here looks like at least 20 there.
We almost have enough to do. We were thinking of interesting bits of merchandise, and we thought we could do a Guess Who. You know that game where you had the little. I think we're like two off being able to do a Guess Who.
Oh man!
With every face on the Guess Who being a former band member.
Have two people join just temporarily?
Have two people join temporarily? Well, no. I think there's people listed. There's people in the band just now who aren't listed on that website almost for certain.
Oh, in that case, you've probably got enough now. Then
how many do you need for Guess Who?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on Guess Who.
I think it might be 40 for Guess Who.
You might be up there then. I don't know.
I'm not. I haven't looked at the list. There's definitely a few people who we've not put on, we never put on the website because we couldn't remember their surnames. I think there was a girl called Ella who was in the band playing cello many, many years ago, but none of us can remember her surname, and she seems to have disappeared off the map. So,
wow,
these things happen when you. That'll be 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a lot. That's a lot of people.
It's a big long list. I was surprised, but it just kept on going as I scrolled down the page.
But I think that's something that you only get. There's only two ways you get that. You either get it from being in a very unsuccessful band, or you get it from being in a relatively successful band with a tyrant running it. And I think of the two, I think I prefer being in the former than in the latter.
But what happens if you're a relatively unsuccessful band with a tyrant running it?
Then I think you'd probably get the same result.
Then you'd be called How to Spin.
That would be indistinguishable from not being a tyrant. I could easily be a tyrant based on the amount of people who've been in the band. The only difference would be that we did have I was out for dinner maybe a year ago, and at the dinner were four current members of the band and like three different guitarists from the last decade, all still happily like hanging out and having beers, which is quite nice, because you imagine that if you were in a famous band and you'd had a guitarist leave, that guitarist would have probably left under acrimonious circumstances. There would have probably been some jealousy over money, or if you were the guy that left before the band had the big hit, you would probably not want to hang out with them because they're all wearing golden hats now, so it's no fun for me. But if you retain a level of non-success, that pretty much the same. If you keep that at an even keel for over a decade, there's no jealousy. There's no poor sentiment. It's all nice.
That's the solution. Is you just make sure that
make sure you never achieve anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure that failure is your greatest success.
The only constant is failure.
Absolutely.
That's it.
You keep a sole member who's the sole surviving member of the original lineup, and you keep failure, and those two things go hand in hand. Actually, that sounds really bad, doesn't it? Because you almost think there was a corollary between them.
The thing, in my defense, I'm probably unfairly maligning my own band here, but I think the music's got better.
Oh yeah, I think you're a very good band, and this is the thing. This is why I think it's good to talk to you, because I think the band is actually very, very good, and people should listen to you. And you've managed to make records, and you've the way to look at it is that I always used to think that I wasn't doing particularly well in music, but then when I look back at it. To have had small labels want to put things out, to have managed to get my name on a piece of vinyl, to get radio play, is loads more than most bands ever manage at all.
Absolutely, and also to not be completely shite I tend to think that that's quite easy, but actually you hear so many bands are terrible.
Yeah.
So to be in a band that doesn't make people just want to run screaming from the room because of their ordinariness is probably something to be quite proud of.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't want to be The View.
Well, exactly. I mean, look at the amount of bands who, from my perspective, like we periodically do a gig with a band who will maybe have been playing for a similar length of time, and you'll go, "Oh my God, you're still playing the same. You're playing the same set as you did when I saw you in 2004 or something like that." And I think there's something quite satisfying about being able to say, "Yeah, we're not." We've gone on for a long period of time, and the amount of success we've had hasn't really changed, but at least the band have moved forward, and you know, there's still a freshness to what it is that we're doing. I think the point where there isn't is probably the point where you call it a day.
Yeah, I think if you've got a band where they're still going after 10 years and they're still playing the first set,
that's alarm bells, isn't it?
Yeah, they're the ones that are going, "Oh, these are the good songs. Oh, one day we'll make it." And then, you know, we've got the first album ready. You know, we're playing the good songs. We're just waiting for the guy to come to the show from the record label. We don't need to write any more songs. We've got the good songs.
I think that's it, though. I think if How to Swim or any of these or another kind of band at this sort of level had started in 1970, I think you would have split up because the facility isn't there for you to do it yourself.
Yeah,
and you would have needed the label support, and you would have needed. So in some ways, the kind of democratization of that stuff has been a blessing for us, because I am able to go. I mean, our goal from the beginning was always to try and do records that sounded like that. I didn't want to. That's kind of one of the reasons why we had so many people in the band, was I didn't want to go, "Well, we don't have any money, so therefore let's restrict ourselves to doing something very small, or let's make a Guided by Voices record or something. Let's just have it be three guys in a garage." And so we would put on string sections and things like that, because I was like, "Well, I know a guy that plays a cello when I know a guy that plays a violin, and I can record the guy that plays the violin twice and record the cello guy twice and make it sound like a thing." And so we always felt we were able to kind of make stuff that punched above its weight. And I think that was because, you know, I can record on the computer in the house. I can record I can record drums at a small, you know, relatively reasonably priced studio and not completely break the bank putting the whole thing together. Which definitely in the 70s, in the 60s or 70s, you just wouldn't be able to do that.
No, it's been I think certainly technology, and it's something that's a regular theme on the podcast, is that the way that technology has allowed us to do these things very cheaply and at a very high quality now.
Yeah.
And on the one side, it's great because, you know, people who didn't have access to the money to do studio recordings and didn't have the time to do it can now record at home. But I suppose the downside is that it means that almost everybody in the world can now make music, so there's a very crowded market.
Yeah.
But the upside, again, though, is it's costing you barely anything to make the records. And if you put them out digitally, then there's not really any production costs for the actual physical product. And you just make the money back slowly from things like Bandcamp and stuff.
Yeah. Although saying that, I think we've made a remarkably small amount of money off Bandcamp. I don't know whether it's that we're not advertising it, promoting it properly, but I still make more money off selling a couple of CDs at a gig than I will off Bandcamp.
You see, I've reached the point where I don't make any physical product anymore.
You don't make it at all?
I don't make a physical version of anything anymore.
See, we're trying to do this. We're trying to put the new one out on vinyl, and I think that's an attempt to resist that in a way. I think I'm attempting to say, like, I think people appreciate the physical. I still think people appreciate the physical artifact more than they do MP3s.
Well, you see, this is the thing. I tried this, and I tried doing this thing called the Super Limited Series, where I would make only 10 copies of each record, and I'd do them handmade sleeves, hand-drawn, and all sorts of stuff, and really quite nicely packaged. And even then, it was a struggle getting people to buy those, you know, that people would quite happily take the music for free. And I deliberately made these releases so that they wouldn't ever be available online to download.
Right. And so you were aiming for the exclusivity and that backfired.
Well, yeah, which was kind of slightly depressing when you can't even sell 10 records.
Yeah. Well, I mean, although by the same time, like we tried this thing a couple of times where you put an album, we put a mini album out or something, and we would put out one track as a freebie as a loss leader, in the assumption that the person would go, "Well, I like that one track, so I'll buy the other five." And almost with no exceptions, that failed every time. because I think there's so many free tunes put out on blogs and stuff now. I think what happens is there's a whole culture of people whose investment in music is, what are all the free things out today? I'll have that one here, and it's like a pick and mix.
Yeah.
They'll just take all the freebie ones because that's the ones they want, and then they'll go and they'll compile that into a playlist, and that'll be what they listen to on the iPod on the way to work. And they won't even think of investing any further into that to see, I quite like that song. Who are they? What else have they done? Because the next day there'll be another new band they can hear a free tune on or whatever, and they can just keep going in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and
it's a bit depressing.
I think the thing is, though, I think, Gregory, is that I think we're coming up kind of being almost kind of the last generation that remembers it being different to that. And I think that the way that what you've just described is the way that music is consumed now. So, you know, we have to look at it. How do we deal with that? You know, I think my solution has been to record as cheaply as possible, which is basically using what I've got at home, so it doesn't cost me anything apart from my time. Put it up digitally and put it up as a pay whatever you like. And if people want to take it for free, great. At least they're listening to it. And if people want to pay me something, then the second somebody pays me for something, even if it's 50p, I'm immediately in credit on that record. Instead of having, you know, all these pressing bills and studio time to pay for and all this kind of stuff. Whereas before, the old days, if you pressed up like 500 7-inch singles, you'd think, oh, great, we'll release this and we'll sell all of them to all our friends and everything, and then we'll get more money back and we'll be able to set up a label and sign somebody else. It'll just snowball from there, and you'd end up with 400 unsold records under your bed.
But the ridiculous thing is that model's not a complete pipe dream, because that model does periodically happen. It just happens so incredibly rarely. Mm-hmm. Like, you and I both will have, like, we've got a rehearsal space, and our rehearsal space has, I think, 350 copies of a record that we printed 500 of 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting that we haven't even been able to sell, you know, 150, more than 150 copies in half a decade of that album. And I think it's a really good album, got really good reviews. You know, a lot of people liked it. We did sell some digitally, but there are people who do that. There are people who do the 500 singles on 45s, mm-hmm. you know, and they all disappear. The first pressing goes out and they have to do a repressing. And then 3 years later, they are signing their own bands and putting out other people on their own record label. So it does happen.
But
so
it's very rare, as you say.
It's just so rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what do you do? Do you not get into making music at all because you think that the odds are against you? Because it can't be, because so many people go into it. It can't be because they think that realistically they're going to be that one in a million.
I think what you have to do is just go into it doing it because you want to do it.
Yeah.
It's a horrible cliche, and it's, again, something that has been said on the podcast before. You know, you do it because you like it, and if anybody else likes it, it's a bonus. Yeah.
It's a braying cliche, but it's totally true.
Absolutely. And you have to look at it that way, and you have to look at it as being something that's a hobby now that will, you know, hope you try and make it cost as little as possible for yourself. And if it does cost you any money, you try and recoup that money and at least break even on it.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I used to think that if I was breaking even, I was doing fine. And it's only been the last few years that I've actually started to have any even tiny profit on it. So,
see, I've just on this new record alone, like we have spent an inordinate amount of money on this new record compared to spending zero.
Yeah.
it's not like we've spent £1 million on it, but we've spent. There's been a lot of studio time, and there's been a lot of, the people that have got paid. We've had string quartets have got paid, and we've paid for the studio, and that has added up. But I think what it's added up to is a record that sounds really good. But I don't think I'm under any illusions that realistically the odds of us seeing a profit on it are still slim. But I don't know. I think I maybe put my head in the sand in terms of the idea that I should do it for nothing. I think I still think that if I hire a studio and get a good engineer in, like, it'll sound better.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, I think with software now, you can get things to sound almost as good as in the studio, or as good as the studio. Because often you'll go to the studio, the software they're using is identical.
The studio. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think again, like what we We recorded at Green Door in Glasgow, which is, do you remember Mother in the Attics?
From
back in the day. The guy from Mother in the Attics now runs the studio up in Glasgow, and we recorded with him, and he engineers. But he's got nice mics, and you know, it's a nice live room, and he knows what he's doing. And we'd heard records that he'd engineered before, so we were like, I think this guy is a safe pair of hands. And I'm, for my money, it's the best sounding stuff that we've had yet. But yes, it's not. I mean, it's not free.
No,
but I don't know.
And the thing is, because it's not free, you have to try and make some money back off it, which I think is completely legitimate. Yeah,
but or you have to just. I mean, and in the old days, we would divide the cost of how much the record cost between everybody in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's got to a point where I think the only person in the band who really thinks that we necessarily need to be spending this money is me.
Yeah.
So it's basically just bankrolled by me now.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it's not something you want to be doing for. I would like to be able to make some money off this at some point. I'd take minimum wage off this and quit my job, but I'm sure you would as well.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
you could make.
If I could afford to pay my mortgage.
If you can afford to pay your mortgage and put some food on the table, I would happily make significantly less money than I'm making in my career right in my job, my day-to-day job right now, if I could quit my day-to-day job and do music all the time.
You see, I've hit that point where to even stay afloat, I would have to earn the same amount as I earn in my day job.
Okay. I might be the same.
This is the thing. I mean, yeah, the thing to remember is that, and this is something that came out very, very graphically with that article about the band Grizzly Bear, I think it was last year, most even successful indie musicians aren't actually making very much money.
Really?
And, yeah.
Grizzly Bear aren't making money.
Some of them don't have anywhere to live and live on friends' floors. None of them have health insurance because they can't afford it. When I looked at the article, they're making roughly, even the main songwriter, about £14,000 a year each.
That's insane.
And that's a successful band.
That's really depressing. No, that's not just a successful band. That's a band that have had, like, their album, their last album went to number one in the American charts.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably only there for a couple of weeks, but, you know, we're talking about a band selling hundreds of thousands of records.
Yeah. And this is it. I mean, it was around the time that record had been a big hit. And the article was saying, you know, well, they're not as successful as you'd imagine. Well, they're not financially viable as you'd imagine. And that's the case. I mean,
that the revelation of that makes them so much less successful than I thought they were.
You see, this is the thing.
That they would be making decent money.
We imagine all these bands as being kind of colossal millionaires, but the reality of it is that they're probably actually earning less money than most of us doing day jobs. They just have the time to be able to then do the music as well.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think it's slightly different as well. Like, it must be more difficult on those guys because they're about my age. I think I'm 32. I think they're about that kind of age, which if you were 19, 20, that's a much easier thing to do, to say, I'm making 14 grand a year. I don't have any health insurance, but I'm 19 and I'm playing the world.
Yeah.
I'm playing Fiji rock, but they're like, they've got wives and kids and stuff. So, yeah. You know, it's a tougher call to make when you're in that kind of position and you've got responsibilities.
Yeah, I mean, it genuinely comes down to a point where you have to decide, is this something I can do viably as a job, or do I have to get a day job? And a lot of musicians now who are in bands who you would consider to be successful, you find out they've got jobs.
Yeah.
And it's that they live very, very inexpensively. And they've managed to find a way of living in such a technique for living that means that they don't have to spend a lot of money.
You definitely don't see as many heavy drug habits
these
days as you would have done.
No, I mean, how the hell?
How could Grizzly Bear afford a drug habit on top of that?
I can never understand how Pete Doherty could afford a drug habit, considering that I can't imagine the Libertines were making a huge amount of money. So
he seems again. I would like, maybe. If you could do a Freedom of Information request on how much all the bands are making,
yeah.
I'd like to know. But I remember we did a festival one time, and you might remember this at the time. It was one of the wee kind of boutique ones up here, and by mistake the promoters emailed out an Excel document telling all the bands how much all the other bands were making.
Oh.
So the headline band, you can see how much the headline bands were making and how much the bands on the bottom rung were making. And we were so on the bottom rung I don't think we were even getting paid for the festival. But the discrepancy between what some of the headline bands were asking and being paid, and what some of the other headline bands on the same stage, like the next day at the same time, were being paid was crazy. It was like somebody's making £11,000 and somebody's making £500. So I don't know. Maybe Grizzly Bear are really bad at having those discussions with promoters as to how much actually they should be getting. But
yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I mean, I've been in situations where I played a show in London once, and everybody else on the bill got paid, and I didn't. And I was like, well, why have I not been paid? And it's like, oh, we couldn't afford you because we've paid everybody else. It's like, why am I less important?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that did leave a sour taste in my mouth, and I didn't play a show for those promoters again because I kind of felt a bit annoyed about it.
It's hard not to feel. I remember we played Tea in the Park maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and there was a behind the scenes bit. We played that tea break stage, yeah. For kind of new bands, unsigned bands, and there was an artist's lounge. Behind in the and we were allowed to go in the backstage area because obviously we were a band, we had the passes, mm-hmm. But we weren't allowed in the artist's lounge.
Yeah, it's the same for us.
We're playing on the same bill as the Strokes and other big bands like you know the Who played that year.
Yeah,
but I don't think I'm any less of an artist.
No,
than these guys. I should be allowed access to the. I'm appearing on the bill at a less prestigious corner of the festival, but I'm not any less of an artist. Yeah. I'm probably playing the same length of set, you know. Yeah. The Who were playing an hour or whatever we were doing. I don't know, we were doing half an hour, but to be not allowed access to that, it seemed to be very much a line had been drawn in the sand.
That was my experience. I mean, I played Tea in the Park twice, once with a band called New Roller and once with Magnetic North Pole, and that was experienced both times. Was, you know, you weren't allowed in the tent with all the food in that was free and the televisions and the cheap bar. you could sit outside it and use the same toilets as members of BIS, but you couldn't drink with them.
you could pretend you were at the same table, but you're not really at the same table.
Exactly. So we should wrap things up because we're coming up to the end of the show.
So we need to work.
Very quickly, you have a crowdfunding thing going on.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about the idea of that as a viable way to make records.
When's that due to finish? Because there's going to be depending on when it finishes, there's going to be one of two things I'm going to say next.
That finishes in 44 days.
So that will be okay. So this podcast may well be out.
Yeah,
before
it may well be out
then.
Before.
So if this is out before then you know, go along and give money to it.
It's not like it's a charity thing. It's just what we're doing is to avoid the thing that we spoke about before of having 400 unsold copies mm-hmm. of something under your bed. We're just trying to get people to pre-order the record. So if people want to buy a T-shirt or they want to buy a copy of the record on CD or on vinyl or a few other things, then they buy it now and then we go and make the stuff afterwards. Which seems to make sense because we've spent a lot of money on the recording side mm-hmm. and there's now the cupboard is bare in terms of actually making physical copies. And I want to do it on vinyl, so the idea is if people want a copy of the record to go and buy it now so that and then they'll get it in 2 months' time or whenever we actually manufacture it.
That sounds reasonable to me. So how would they find out about it? Where would they go to get that from?
Let me get the link to this thing. It's it's www.pledgemusic.com/projects/how-to-swim2013. It's now very clear to me that that's not the most. But there should have been a more memorable
tiny URL. It.
I think I should tiny URL yeah. it.
Tiny URL is.
If I give you a tiny URL link to it, you can put something on the Future Library page with a shorter link. Yeah.
Well, just paste that link into the Skype chat thing, and we will do it live on the show. I'll tiny awesome. URL it for you.
Okay, that goes in there. You got it?
Okay, let's have a look. Yep. Let's see. Yeah, great big long URL there, and we'll just call it. How to Swim 2013. Let's see what happens with that. Or 2014, or maybe. Let's see. A long URL to make into a short URL. And we'll try HTS2013. We'll make a tiny URL. Let's see. So that one's not available. Let's try a different. See if we can get a short one.
HTS 2014.
Let's try that, Okay, let's try that. HTS 2014. Let's try that. Now that's available. So you've now got tinyurl.com/HDS2014. So go to there.
So go there.
Yeah, so that works. So, and that will take you to the page, and it resolves itself back into a normal URL. There we go, it works. So that takes you to the... Oh, but then it takes you to page not found. Oh, no.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, why has that happened? Oh, because there was a space in How to Swim. No! Hold on.
Is there a space in it?
Let's fix that. Let's fix that. Let's fix that. Let's fix it. So, unfortunately, that URL has now been used. Okay, no. Okay, this is good for the listeners again.
This is quality radio.
Okay, HTS Fund 2014. Let's try that. Okay, that seems to have worked. Open a new window. So let's try this before I do anything and tell you what it is. Has it worked? No, that doesn't work either. What the hell? Yeah, that's something that... Okay, listen, let's ignore all that. We'll work it out, and the link will be posted in the pod information once the whole thing's done.
And we've got a couple of... There's a few of the tracks off the album are available to listen to online at this point. So, you know, if people want to listen to it and they like the stuff and they want to get the full album, then, yeah, go to the link.
And there's a picture of some people wearing black in a field.
Yeah. That's how we look.
Yeah, that's the band. And that's where you live, actually, in that field.
Yeah. There's We have a couple of wigwams. It's lovely.
Well, I was going to say, actually, that's your living room, and you've just got a very good mural on the wall and quite interesting carpet.
It's very deep. Very deep pile.
Very deep pile. Very grassy looking. And options that you have, you can have Gregor will bake you a cake. Maybe a limit will be written. There'll be a tote bag. There's a load of options there. So go and have a look. And, you know, fun times will be had by all. So there you go. Obviously, don't go to howtoswim.com or .net. Because those websites don't tell you anything of use at all. But there will be links in the thing. So before we finish, is there anything you'd like to tell us before we go?
No. That's it. Really, it's been a fun chat.
Excellent times. Okay, well, as I say, listeners, go and check that out. Hopefully, it's still running by the time the podcast comes out. I really have to pace myself a bit with these now because I'm getting so far ahead. It's going to be. I'll be telling people, right, I'm speaking to you now, but don't tell me about anything that you're doing until 2017. That'd be ridiculous. So, you know, maybe I'll take a couple of weeks off or something. But it won't make any difference to the listeners, because I've got so many ahead that it's going to just keep on trundling out on a weekly basis.
Seamless.
Yes, seamless, exactly. So, Gregor, it's been an absolute joy speaking to you. Thank you for coming on.
You too. I apologise for the washing machine going in the background.
Oh, don't worry about that. That's part of it.
That's part of the charm.
Yeah, that's all sorts of things like that happen. That's fine. People probably can hear my chair creaking all the way through. Okay, so... I will be, come back next week to listen to another show. This one will be up when it's up. Gregor, thank you. All that's left to say is Future Library goodbye. Bye-bye. Future Library is brought to you by petpiranha.com, where you can go and find out various things about people who we've talked about and various people who haven't been on the podcast yet, but might be in the future. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's twitter.com/futurelibrary1, so that's Future Library with a number 1. And you can email me at alexbottom@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe via iTunes. Just search for Future Library there. That's it. Thanks.